Good morning, everyone. John Huckenberry here with Celeste Headlee. Well, the latest from the Gulf, the president will be visiting the region and will be getting an earful. We've already been told that by reporters down there from local political officials. And also, he'll be giving an earful to BP company officials, presumably. They're still trying to cap the oil gusher that continues in the Gulf. You can see the live video feed of the mud attempting to be put in that riser pipe to try to limit the back pressure of oil and keep the oil from spilling out. They haven't accomplished that yet. But consider what we've learned over the last 39 days since the explosion on the Deepwater Horizon. Blowout preventers, you know, kill mud. We've learned about that. We learned about riser pipes. We've learned about the
top
threats.
Hats and top kills and junk shots.
And it raises all kinds of questions, and we've been accumulating them from you. And if you have a question, it's totally understandable. You can go to your cell phone and text the word TAKE to 69866. Submit your question. We're going to be answering them all hour long. And Lisa Marganelli is with us, once again, director of the New America Foundation's Energy Policy Initiative. She joins us in the wee hours of the morning out on the Pacific Coast. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
And David Biello joins us once again, associate editor of Environment and Energy at Scientific American. Folks, this is your opportunity to get a serious question answered, and we already have a bunch, and we're going to submit them to both of these guys. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
David, what is your question that you most want answered after 39 days of this crisis?
I think the question that I most want answered is what really went wrong in the first place, and why was BP so confident in the blowout preventer in the first place that they had no real backup plan?
Very
interesting. And we still don't have an answer to that.
That's right. And, you know, in some ways we're in the middle of this crisis, and the lessons are going to be learned over decades, not really months. Lisa, during the past month or so, Eric has a question for you here. Eric says, it wasn't that long ago that some expert said if there was a thunderstorm in the Gulf or a foreign politician said the wrong thing, the price of oil jumped $10 a barrel. Okay, a little exaggeration, says Eric, but now we have a gusher loose in the Gulf, and the Koreans want to blow each other up, and oil prices are at a level we can live with. I don't get it. Why aren't oil prices spiking right now, Lisa?
Well, a couple things. One thing is that consumption has dropped pretty significantly over the past year. So basically, we're using a lot less. We use like 3.5% less gasoline than we used a year and a half ago. And the other thing is there's just more oil on the market, and that those big jumps in prices get driven by when there's sort of a million barrels a day that we don't know exactly where it's coming from. So it's what they call the marginal barrels. And normally the world uses about 100 million barrels a day, and it's only when there's sort of shortages on the edges that the price jumps. And right now there's no shortage. There's actually lots of extra oil lying around in tankers.
Lisa, here's a blame question from Rachel in Hollandale, Florida. It's posted on our website at takeaway.org. As horrible as this spill is, I feel it could have happened to any big oil company. I don't know what boycotting the brand will help clean up this oil spill any faster, and that should be the goal, referring to people who want BP boycotted. Why boycott BP now, asks Rachel.
Well, I don't really advocate boycotting oil companies because, in my opinion, it doesn't hurt enough. And the problem is that it's kind of an empty gesture because when you buy gasoline, you're basically buying molecules. You might be buying it at a BP station, but they might have been refined at another refinery, or they might have come from another company's drilling. They're not necessarily BP's oil. So if you want to punish the oil companies, I would say, you know, organize to reduce all of our dependence on oil, or start taking your bike to work a couple days a week. If you want to punish BP specifically, you can write them letters. You can buy stock in their company and crash their next shareholder meeting.
Well, that's interesting. David, this was posted by a listener, Adam, in New York on the Takeaways Facebook page. How is the oil spill and this gusher affecting the buildup and the already growing dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico? David?
Well, it's an interesting question. It's actually kind of a little bit of a science experiment. Oil is toxic. It's particularly bad for algae. The algae is what causes the annual bloom. And that's followed by the dead zone. The dead zone that's caused by the fertilizer runoff from the Midwest. So the oil spill might actually help prevent the seasonal dead zone. The problem is the oil spill will create its own dead zone. There are bacteria and fungi and other microbes that like to eat the oil, and when they do that, they consume oxygen. And they tend to do that in the deep water. And the problem with getting rid of oxygen in the deep water is that there's really no good way to get it back. That doesn't mix with the atmosphere as much. So once you create a dead zone down there, you might not get it back.
So toxicity plus the lack of oxygen produces a dead zone where no life can live, and when they grow, they have an impact on the broad ecology there in the Gulf. Here's a question, David, from a listener who called 8778-MY-TAKE.
This is Kathy LaQuie. I'm from Nahant, Massachusetts. I keep wondering why we can't have the experts on underwater dealing with that, and the experts on dealing with a terrible oil spill that's approaching the coast deal with that, and not have one company. I mean, BP will be responsible to pay for it, but there's a crisis that needs to be addressed, and they don't know that much about cleaning up.
David, you hear a kind of frustration in Kathy's voice there, thinking that the experts are someplace besides the oil company here. How do you respond to what she's asking?
Underwater, the experts, unfortunately, or fortunately, are at the oil companies. They are the folks who are doing the deep water drilling all around the world. They are the folks with the technology to do this. So, in many ways, we're stuck with them. Thanks to many decades of a lack of federal oversight, there is no alternative. Hmm. As for the onshore effort, it appears to be a team effort. Certainly, the Coast Guard, the National Guard, you know, some people have talked about calling the military out. Well, the military is actually out for this. BP is involved, obviously, as are pretty much any other oil company you can name. And then you have all the state and local officials. So it's not like there are any experts kind of waiting on the sideline or BP is directing some kind of a conspiracy. It's a team effort.
All right, David Biello is Associate Editor of Environment and Energy at Scientific American. Stay with us. We're going to come back to you later on in the hour. And Lisa Marganelli, a listener has an assignment for you to calculate the long-term impact and cost of this oil spill. Will you stay with us for that?
Sure, with my calculator.
Yeah, Lisa Marganelli, Director of the New America Foundation's Energy Policy Initiative. You have frustrations. We know that. Pick up your phone, text the word TAKE to 69866. We'll tell you how to submit your question. You might get charged for it, but it's worth it, believe me. Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry here with Celeste Headley, and you still have time to call us with your questions about the Gulf crisis. You know how to call us. You know how to post a comment to thetakeaway.org, and you can text 69866, the word TAKE, to 69866. You may get charged for it, and we'll tell you how you can submit your question for Lisa and David, who are coming up. Talking about the Gulf oil spill, BP says it will be 48 hours before we know if the latest procedure has worked to stop the Gulf oil leak, and President Obama will visit the Gulf later today.
Abroad, a big decision this morning from Japan. The U.S. and Japan have reached a new agreement on the relocating a controversial American military base on the Japanese island of Okinawa. The base will be moved from its current urban location to a less crowded part of the island. Joining us now, Roland Burke. He's correspondent for our partner, the BBC, in Tokyo. And Roland, there was the Prime Minister in Japan staked a lot of his political reputation on moving this out of Okinawa, possibly out of the country. He said he would tear up the agreement that he'd made with the U.S. in 2006. He made promises that he would move the base. This is a bit of a humiliation for him, and he may pay for it in upcoming elections.
Yes, his opinion poll support has crashed. This is a man who only in August was elected with a landslide. Now, opinion polls show that two-thirds of people disapprove of his performance. And tonight he's had to sack a junior member of his governing coalition who disagreed with this deal that's been done with the United States. Essentially what's happened is that the 2006 agreement will be implemented, the agreement that Mr. Hatoyama had vowed to tear up. That means that the U.S. Marines base will remain on Okinawa, moving as previously agreed from a city centre to the island's coast. But there have been demonstrations on Okinawa, tens of thousands of people demanding it be moved away. So it's really a serious dent for Mr. Hatoyama's credibility.
This is a major strategic base for the United States, though, and one might say that the current situation on the Korean Peninsula is an argument as why the United States might need a base in this area. Does anyone in Japan actually recognize that? Critics of the agreement, that is?
Yes, people do recognise that. And in the joint statement from Washington and Tokyo, they said that the tensions on the Korean Peninsula underline the importance of the alliance. But I think the arguments over Futenma have been going on for a lot longer than that, from well before that ship was sunk and North Korea was blamed. Really, these US bases are critical to Japan because they defend Japan, but also to the balance of power in Asia, a balance of power in a region where North Korea is very unpredictable, and of course where the might of China is rising as well. So that was one of the reasons the United States objected on operational grounds to some of the alternative locations that Mr. Hatoyama floated, and one of the reasons he's had to back down.
Okay, Roland Burke, a correspondent for our partner, the BBC, in Tokyo. Those are some of the news stories that we're watching this morning.
So, more than a month, the Gulf oil has been gushing underneath the Gulf waters after the Deepwater Horizon rig exploded and sank, and so many feelings in that time. Listen.
Mile after mile of our shoreline is now oiled.
I don't know anything we could be doing that we aren't doing.
We continue to hold BP responsible as a responsible party.
We will not rest until this well is shut.
It's too early to know if it's going to be successful.
It could also lead to the release of a lot of toxic drilling mud.
They've had some success overnight, so everybody's cautiously optimistic.
Assessments, feelings, lots and lots of questions. And this morning we've been taking your questions at all the places where you can reach us at The Takeaway and submitting them to our guests, Lisa Marganelli, the director of the New America Foundation's Energy Policy Initiative, who stayed with us for the hour. Good morning again, Lisa.
Good morning.
And David Biello, the associate editor of the Environment and Energy domain at Scientific American Magazine. David, thanks for staying with us.
Problem.
So here's a listener on our Facebook page who asks, I want to know the absolute worst case scenario of how far the slick could realistically travel. David?
Well, it depends on what we're worried about. If it's the kind of thick, gooey oil, that's not so easy to travel as long as you're away from the kind of Gulf Coast of Louisiana, stretching into Texas and Alabama, Mississippi, parts of Florida. You're probably not going to see too much of that. If we're worried about tar balls and that kind of thing, well, those can travel quite widely. There are actually millions of these things bobbing in the sea, and it's quite possible that tar balls from this particular incident will end up really all over the world eventually. And if we're worried about toxic, you know, hydrocarbon molecules, well, those are pretty small and they can spread pretty far. They'll likely end up in the Arctic.
Lisa Marganelli knows a thing or two about molecules. Since we're talking about worst-case scenarios here, Laura in North Miami texted us with this question to 69866. I would like to know the real cost of this mess. The long-term impact has to be considered, all the effects on the local economies, the effects on the habitats. So what kind of math do you do to get a long-term impact here, Lisa?
Yeah, that's pretty rough. The one figure I've seen is $14 billion. I think in some ways there's a lot of things that you can't calculate. The fishing and tourism industry in the Gulf is worth about $2 billion a year and 8,000 jobs. And what happens when a family that's been fishing for five generations or something decides to sell their boat because they can't go out for two seasons? I don't know how you put a number on that. But there is another way of calculating, which is to take every ton of oil that's spilled and calculate the cleanup costs. So there's an expert on the East Coast named Dagmar Schmidt-Etkin who has done this, and she calculates that it's about $16,491.97 per ton, which is 7.3 barrels.
Let's just back up there. So $16,500 per seven barrels,
yep,
or so.
Yeah.
That's pretty huge.
It is pretty huge. So my calculation is that if you imagine that they've been spilling 20,000 barrels a day for 39 days, we're up to $2 billion in 1999 dollars. So I don't know exactly what, and I haven't done the rest of this calculation. And kind of taking an upper look at it, we might be up around $8 billion so far.
And that takes us directly to Lisa, for our listener in Detroit, who texted us at 69866. I want to know if BP is going to take advantage of a federal statute that limits all liability from nuclear or environmental disasters to no more than $75 million. What do you think?
Well, that statute is actually part of the Oil Pollution Act of 1990. So, and it, BP is probably going to try to take advantage of it. They're committed. They have to pay much more than that for the cleanup. The $75 million is a limit on liability. Congress keeps trying to raise that liability limit, which I think is a great idea. And at the same time, I've read that if it's shown that BP was negligent, then that limit is off. And it seems like BP believes that they're going to end up paying a lot more for liability because early on in the spill, they tried to get people to sign waivers saying that they wouldn't sue for damages, if I think for some sort of settlement.
That. They've definitely stopped that. So, David Biello, Mr. Scientific American, are you ready for a question on emulsification and diffusion?
Sure.
All right. We just heard from someone talking about the hurricane estimate that came out yesterday, and it looks pretty grim this hurricane season. What is the likelihood that this oil could end up in an actual hurricane cloud and disperse an oil slick way inland in a way that we maybe haven't seen before?
Well, certainly it's going to disperse an oil slick if a hurricane comes, even less than a hurricane, a tropical depression. Certainly it's going to disperse the oil way inland because just from the wave action. I'm not even talking the storm itself. The big waves that a hurricane kicks up will push that oil far deeper into the marshes than we've seen really anywhere else. And unfortunately, it looks like it's going to be a very active hurricane season. That doesn't mean there'll be one in the Gulf of Mexico, but it certainly has to be cause for concern for everybody who lives there.
You know, finally, Lisa, these are the kinds of questions that, you know, listeners have this sort of intuitive way of getting to the heart of something. We got this from a listener named David. Why is BP planning on shutting this well down if it's still producing so much crude? Before we go.
Well, BP wasn't going to shut it down. They were going to close it for a little while, and they were going to come back and put in pipes to actually produce the oil, from what I understand. They weren't shutting it down. They were shutting it in, which is different than shutting it down.
So if they do get this plug, they'll want to drill another hole and actually get that oil, right?
Oh, goodness. Who knows what's going to happen to I mean, we don't know if there's going to be a moratorium on drilling in the Gulf. We don't know how tricky. Something is obviously very, very bizarre and tricky about this reservoir.
And that means more and more questions from all of you. Keep the conversation going. We've got the Q&A up on our blog so you can look back, add your own questions. You know how to reach us. Thanks to Lisa Marganelli, director of the New America Foundation's Energy Policy Initiative, for getting up so early out there in Northern California. Thanks, Lisa. And David Biello, associate editor of Environment and Energy at Scientific American. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Memorial Day is coming up, and we want to hear from you. We'll be talking to people who've served and are still serving in the military. But who do you remember on Memorial Day? Give us a call with your memorial at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post to thetakeaway.org. We'll want to hear from you all weekend long. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm John Hockenberry. Have a great weekend. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is The Takeaway.